Today, we're very excited to continue our monthly program called Dimensions University, geared towards LGBTQ plus youth here in our Valley. Every month, we'll bring in local, state, and our national nonprofits to speak about resources for youth and their families. We'll also highlight the successes, challenges, and stigmas facing queer youth today. In-kind support for this program comes from Gay for Good Rocky Mountains. Today, we're very excited to be joined by Sarah and Ian Hoffman, co-authors of three books with an LGBTQ plus theme. Thanks for joining us today, Sarah and Ian.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's great having you. So let's start with, you know, all these shows that I do, I don't like to ever assume anything. So let's start with what pronouns you use and how do you identify?
I use she, her pronouns.
And I use he, him pronouns.
I identify as bi.
Sure, and I identify as heterosexual, although if you were to meet me, you'd assume I was a gay man.
My partner, everyone's always shocked when they find out he's gay because he is like a lumberjack and they're always surprised. So that's why I always like to ask. I never like to assume anything. So So let's dive into the three books that you guys co-wrote and tell our listeners what inspired you to write each of them.
So our first book is called Jacob's New Dress, and it's about a little boy who wears a dress. And it was inspired by our own son, Sam, who was a little boy who liked all things pink and sparkly, starting when he was about 2 years old and asked for his first pair of pink sneakers. And then it turned into long hair and wearing tutus and tiaras and...
Disney princesses was a big part of it.
Yes, and wearing the princess dress-up costume at preschool every day. And then when he was 4, he asked if he could wear a dress to school for real. And, you know, we were worried because we didn't want him to be teased. And actually, this is a great story because we were working with him on things he could say if he got teased. Really simple things because he was 4, like, don't tease me, or just to say no and stamp his foot. And, you know, he did get teased that first day that he wore a dress. And he said something that was so much better than anything we coached him on. He said, "I can be a boy and wear a dress because it is my choice." So, you know, when he went to kindergarten and was this little boy in a dress, and, you know, he was the only one. And we looked around for books for kids like him because we wanted him to see that he was not alone and there were others like him, and there were no books. And so I had already been writing for adults about kids and gender, but we...
And I'd been writing children's books on unrelated themes. And we realized we needed a book out there in the world to support the boys in the pink dresses, the boys like Sam.
It kind of reminds me of, I remember seeing a YouTube video, I think it was with Channing Tatum, with one of his kids, and he dressed up as Elsa for Halloween with his, I believe I think it was his daughter, and they were both princesses together, and they went out Halloween, and she wanted him to be a princess too, and he totally did it. And I was like, that is so amazing. Yeah. It was Hollywood leading man is dressing up like Elsa.
That's so great. I mean, support of your parents and your community is really everything for these kids because they get so much opposition in their lives. So it means a lot when adults are able to step up like that.
And the second book, well, Sam went to elementary school. Kindergartens are set up so the bathroom is actually attached to the classroom. Okay. But when you get to first grade, you're using the bathroom in the hallway with the older or bigger kids. You're using it with everybody. So he had this very supportive kindergarten teacher who did all these lessons on gender and acceptance and kindness. So he wasn't hassled in kindergarten in the bathroom. But once he got to first grade, he was in the bathroom with older, bigger kids who had not been taught about, you know, kindness and gender diversity. And he was hassled a lot. You know, he was taunted, he was teased, he was challenged, he was kicked once, and he came up with the 6-year-old solution to the problem, which is that if the bathroom is difficult and challenging, I'm just not going to use the bathroom.
So he stopped going to the bathroom at school, which made him sick.
Along the way of being Sam's parents, we found a community of parents of kids like Sam, boys and girls. We became each other's support group and peers and allies and mentors and anything you can possibly be as we're all trying to figure out this new gender landscape together. We realized there were three questions the parents asked each other when we met. The first question was always, is your family supportive of your child? And the second question was always, is your kid's school supportive? And the third question, astonishingly enough, was always, how is your kid's school handling the bathroom? Like, this was not just a problem for Sam. This was a problem for every child that we talked to and their families.
Who looks different than people expect them to look when they walk into a bathroom.
Right. It was a problem for the tomboys. It was a problem for the, you know, the boys in the pink dresses. It was a problem for everybody. So we realized that, you know, oh, we need another book out there.
And that's when we wrote our second book, which was called Jacob's Room to Choose. And it's about kids being allowed to choose the bathroom that is right for them, regardless of their gender.
So I'll let you guys go into, tell us about the third book you wrote and why you wrote that.
Sure. Well, the response we got from kids and parents and teachers and librarians from the first two books was very positive. And we felt like we were doing some good in the world. And our editor asked us if we wanted to continue this series. And we said, sure. And so we did this funny thing is we had these very insightful teenagers at home. And we, Sarah and I both had ideas about what we'd want a next book to be about. But we decided to involve them in it too, because we talk about our work all the time as a family. And so we had a family meeting where we sat down at dinner and we pitched story ideas to each other. Not that either of us has ever been to any session where we got pitched story ideas before, but we all sat around the table and we discussed our story ideas and then we picked the best one. And the best one was we decided that Jacob's world needed to make a place to talk about pronouns.
So that book is called?
Jacob's School Play, starring he, she, and they.
Wow. So who was your target audience? Was it people at Sam's age was a target audience, or did you go think broader than that when you were thinking about writing these books?
Our initial concern was to write books for four-year-olds.
Okay.
Because we could see that kids become aware of gender around age two. And by the time they make it to kindergarten, things are really very strongly set in their minds. So getting to them at preschool, where these kids are expressing their gender and getting opposition from their classmates or their community, that was the place to be supportive.
And at the most basic level, we wanted to show kids like Sam that there were others like them, that they weren't alone. But we also wanted to show other kids who were not like that, who were gender typical or, you know, typical in any way, that there's lots of different ways of being a kid.
We've realized that since then that our books have a broader appeal, especially as they're used in elementary schools, and they're used like up through third grade. We see that pretty often.
And when we go do talks at schools, we do K-8, we've done high school, we've done college, but you know, there's even though the books are not directed at a kid who's a seventh grader, there's a lot to discuss with kids of that age. In fact, the last school visit we did before the pandemic closed things down and we started doing virtual school visits, we had this great day at a local school, and we did talks for K-1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we had lunch with the middle school GSA, which was fantastic. And they, you know, these kids are so involved. They know so much. We learn from them. And so there's things to talk about with people of all ages based on the themes in the books.
Yeah, and we have very active GSAs, and for our listeners here in the Roaring Fork Valley, we call them gender sexuality alliances. Sometimes they're called gay straight alliances, and we have most of our schools here have very active GSAs. Here in Carbondale, where you know we're broadcasting from, the GSA actually put on the first Pride Parade here 2 years ago, and Gay for Good helped them put that on, and that was pretty groundbreaking considering, you know, our population is only, you know, about 6,000 people here. And we had hundreds of people come out for a Pride Parade. And it was all because the GSA wanted it and it was their idea. So I think a lot of times we underestimate our youth and what they're capable of. And, you know, books like this can really empower them to think outside the box.
We feel really clear that kids are changing the world. And as adults, we're just following along and trying to keep up.
Right.
Now, our daughter is, she's a high school sophomore, and she tells us about her friends who are changing their names, changing their pronouns, have sexual identities that we had not heard of when we were that age. And And it's extraordinary. And I'm just, you know, trying to get my middle-aged brain to be able to remember, oh, that kid, you know, now identifies as this and now uses that name. And I'm not even seeing them, or the last time I saw them, they had a mask. And so what do they really look like? And it's really the kids who are leading the way.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. But also to your point, it makes me feel older than I really am, because I'm like, is this what the kids are saying nowadays? And what does that mean? And so I'm constantly learning and growing and trying to stay educated and knowledgeable, because it is a different world than when we all grew up. And in a lot of ways, it's a great thing. So it's very encouraging to see what the kids are doing nowadays.
And the broader culture too. I mean, when our son was little, RuPaul's Drag Race was not an idea in anybody's mind, right, let alone a successful television program.
Yeah, and all the gay and trans characters you can see now on TV and in movies.
Yeah, we just had to research that recently, and a listing of like how many gay characters there were on television over the decades. And there's this sudden explosion, like at the end of the 90s. And then when you get to the middle of the 2000s or the 2010s, you start to see gay characters where being gay is not part of their story arc. They just are gay. That's incidental to what's going on in the story.
Which is actually the book I wanted to write in the very beginning, was a book where we did not deal with gender at all. There was just this little boy who wore a dress and he did whatever kids do. And we do actually hope that our fourth book can be something like that, that maybe we're finally at that point where we can just have these little gender nonconforming kids who are just doing their kid thing.
Our idea when we wrote these books was that in 25 years, they would be quaint. People would pick them up and say, why didn't anybody think that they needed to write a book about a boy wearing a dress?
Maybe we'll get there. And you know, to your question about audience, in some ways, we're trying to write to more of a more conservative than we are audience, in a sense, because we can preach to the converted. It's, you know, it has a certain usefulness, but building solidarity and such. But as far as the adults we reach, we would like to be able to show people that different gender expression and other different ways of being a person are actually okay. And so helping to normalize these things is really kind of our overarching goal. And I think our even broader overarching goal around that is just building a society that's more compassionate and accepting.
To coin the amazing RuPaul, you know, we're all born naked and the rest is drag. It really is that simple. You know, obviously there's societal norms that say, you know, you're supposed to dress a certain way because history has always said that. But who's to say that's the case now? You look in the Victorian ages and guys wore dresses back then and had wigs, and, you know, and we've swung the pendulum the other way. And it's just very interesting to me, you know, a phrase that simple is so powerful because it really makes you think, like, everything we're wearing right now is drag.
Exactly. Right. There's part of our presentation that we do for kids and for grown-ups sometimes, which looks at historical photographs, and we show, oh, look, these little boys are wearing knickers. Like, is anyone wearing knickers today? And, well, all these girls are wearing dresses, and that, you know, it would be so weird for a girl to be wearing pants. And we talk about how the point of showing those images is that what we think is normal now will change and has changed throughout history. And that our message is quite simply that if what you're wearing is comfortable for you and isn't hurting you and doesn't cause harm to anyone else, then, you know, people should be allowed to just wear what works for them.
So kind of pivoting a little bit here, Sarah and Ian are your pen names. What prompted you not to use your real names?
The very first article I wrote about our kid and gender, he was maybe 3 or 4. And I used my real name. I gave him a pen name because that seemed like that was important for safety. And right away, someone figured out who we were, and they pointed to an article we had been in for a completely unrelated thing and said, wait, your kid's name is this. And I was like, okay, creepy man, who just figured out, you know, what my kid's name is. And then, you know, the hate mail started coming in and people saying our, you know, children should be taken away from us. And we were like, okay, so this is not safe. You know, people are really, really worked up about the fact that we let our son put on a leotard and go to gymnastics class.
We also felt like our son needed to be in control of his own story. Like, if and when he ever wanted to tell it, he should be able to tell his story. And people often confuse the fictional character of Jacob in our books with our son Sam, as though we're just writing nonfiction and this is what happened. Jacob is like an amalgamation of all of these gender nonconforming boys that we've known and all of these family stories that we've heard from many different stories, from many different families. It's hard for readers to tease those two things apart. So having pen names and that separation gives our son the chance to be himself, to tell his story in his own way when he needs to, and also to get a little separation between Jacob and Sam and our son.
Yeah, and now that he's 19, you know, it's less of a, we have small children and it's a safety concern thing. There's another element, which is like, oh, he's an adult going out in the world and he gets to figure out who he is without, you know, the way his parents told his story being the first thing that people see. So he doesn't really want, he's not in any way ashamed of the story. In fact, I think he's quite proud of having been a little boy who wore a dress and, you know, stood up for himself and all the hard stuff he went through, and it contributed to his high level of self-confidence as an adult. But he wants his own story to be forward and not the background. So it's sort of, that's sort of our gift to him. We do check in with him every year. So like, can we stop using these pen names? Because it's really a drag for PR. So we're letting him control that choice.
Yeah. But I mean, it makes sense. And it's unfortunate you have to go that route. At least you were able to still get the books put out there and keeping you and your family safe at the same time.
Look, I'll admit, it's not a terrible thing to rile up people who are going to be riled up by these topics. I was striving for the most mainstream press I could. So there, I don't know if you remember, there's this magazine really geared toward like wealthy, traditional moms.
It was Condé Nast Publications entering into the family market.
Yeah. So I placed an article there about Sam, and they had more comments on that article than they'd ever had on any article before. It was largely negative. There was a lot of people who were just sort of ignorant about what it's like to raise a kid like this. Like, well, you're not a strong enough parent. If you just said no to those marabou feather high heel slippers, then he wouldn't want them. You know, and that's actually a place where we really have somewhere to go. There's really some education, because people don't know what it's like to raise a kid like this until they do. In fact, there's one parent I interviewed. I thought she was so fascinating because she's very traditional. She came from a very traditional culture. She's Colombian, she's Catholic, she's trained as a doctor, she's a pediatrician. And she had these two twin boys. And one of them was gender normative and the other was not. And she was so frustrated by this boy who, as she said, didn't know how to be a boy, right? He wants to wear his sister's dresses while his brother's playing with trucks. And she's like, this is what it's like to be a boy. You have to be like this because you have a penis. And then one day she stopped herself and said, wait a minute, why do I have to teach this one how to be a boy? And the other one just knows. And that was her turning point, where she finally realized she needed to get educated on gender expression, and that maybe she couldn't turn this one into the other one, that this one was just something else.
Yeah. And I'm glad you simplify like that, because it is that simple. So I think we overthink these things sometimes. And, you know, I'm not a parent myself, and I am always very empathetic to parents trying to put their kid into the mold they expect them to be. Mm-hmm. And no matter what that is, no one's going to be that mold. No matter if you want that kid to be a doctor, they may or not be a doctor. They may or may not go to college, even though you want them to go to college. They may wear a dress, even though you don't want them to wear a dress. So, you know, from a parent standpoint, I can only imagine the struggles of having the ideal of what your kid should be. But I don't know of any parent that ever said that my kid came out exactly the way I raised them. That's not realistic. And I think that's a lot of pressure parents put on themselves.
Exactly.
I think there's another pressure that parents put on themselves that's very realistic, which is, how safe is it for my child to do this? And that varies tremendously from community to community. And that always has to be taken into account.
That's right. So for some kids, it doesn't matter how accepting you are if your kid's going to be brutalized when they walk out of your house. You know, so there's environments in which you have to make hard choices that you wouldn't want to make.
And we do know families who live in environments where they say to their kids, like, you can be who you are at home, but when you go to school, you have to do this other thing. And that support from the family makes a huge amount of difference.
Or no support makes a huge difference, right? Too. Yeah, right? On the other extreme.
Right, yeah. There's this amazing work done by a nonprofit called the Family Acceptance Project in San Francisco. A woman named Caitlin Ryan did a study several years ago about the health and mental health outcomes of LGBT kids and kids who are more typical in all the ways. And so we know, we can look at health and mental health outcomes for kids who are not gay, trans, et cetera. And what she discovered through this study is that the LGBT kids who had a high level of family and community support had the exact same health and mental health outcomes as the straight kids. And it's when they had unaccepting environments, whether it was at home or at school or in their church or their grandmother or whatever, that their health and mental health declined. But she also could show, she made this super cool mathematical model that showed that even a little bit of support, so the aunt who loves you, the pastor at church, the PE teacher, you know, someone gives you a little bit of support, well, that actually bumps up your health and mental health outcomes, right? And they looked at all the typical indicators, depression, anxiety, suicidality, all the, you know, all the negative outcomes. And it was astonishing to see what we knew in our heart in black and white, that family and community support literally makes all the difference for these kids. I was glad you brought up how, you know, we don't know if a kid is going to grow up to be an artist or a lawyer. I remember that we used to be part of this listserv. It was, and you know, everyone would want to know, like, is my kid going to turn out to be gay? Are they going to turn out to be trans? And we would see stuff like, we have no idea about anything. You know, are they going to be a hairstylist or a doctor? Like, we don't expect to know these things. So let this thing be unknowable too, and let this outcome sort of evolve as it does, and just know that the most important thing is that we love and support them. And this group of kids, many of whom we've followed because we've stayed friends with the parents, they have, you know, all the outcomes, almost all the outcomes in the book. So you've got the kids who are trans, the kids who are gender normative, the kids who are genderqueer in some interesting way, they're gay,
they're non-binary.
Yeah, they're straight, they're bi, they're pansexual, you know, they are everything you can imagine. But the thing that is universally true for every single family we know from this original community is that all these kids are alive because they all had families who cared enough to be there for support. And in some cases, you know, took in a foster kid. We didn't have that support. It was kind of wonderful to just see the impact of that love and acceptance.
And for a lot of the more conservative dads who, for whom these gender expressions were both foreign, and they could see that they were sending their kid to school with a target on their back. Like, my kid's gonna get brutalized. I gotta toughen them up. I gotta do something about them. When they saw the suicide statistics, that's when they had the change of heart. They said to themselves, I can either learn to grapple with this, my son, that I don't really understand what's going on here, but we can figure something out. Or I can mourn my dead son when they kill themselves. And I mean, that's a horrible thing to say out loud, but for a lot of people, that was the moment where they're like, okay, I'm gonna grapple with the difficult issues.
Yeah.
And that's the reality, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So Sarah and Ian, how can our listeners get a copy of these books?
You can go to your local bookstore, and if they do not already have it on the shelf, they can order it for you. Or you can go to Imagination Press and order it off of their website, or you can go to any online place where you normally buy books.
On our website, you can find all the places. There's IndieBound, which is kind of great. It orders from a local independent bookstore for you, and all the other options as well.
Well, you hinted earlier that there might be a fourth book on the horizon. Is that still in the infancy stage, or is it a sure thing?
Definitely in the infancy stage. Definitely being supported by the midwife, by the midwifery of our editor. So yeah, we're looking to do a fourth book, and Sarah's going to get her wish, and it's not going to be about gender. It's going to be about holidays, because we've developed this cast of characters who can take on a whole bunch of diverse issues. And so it's something that we've seen. We live in San Francisco. We live in a place with a lot of different cultures and a lot of different holidays, and people sort of grappling about how to recognize that and make it work in the school system and make it work interpersonally. We think there's a good story there.
So what do you want our listeners to take away from our conversation, Dave? If there's something you could leave them with. I know we covered a lot of territory, but anything that resonates with you?
I would like your readers to take away from this the idea that change is possible. You know, when our son, Sam, was in kindergarten and having struggles and starting to have struggles in the bathroom, we were trying to get the school to change. And it was incredibly hard. It was a traditional environment. They really struggled with it. And it was very frustrating. And it was frustrating for Sam to have a problem, have a report of the school, and have the same problem happen the next day. So we got kind of big picture with him, and we talked to him about other people throughout history who got fed up with what was going on around them and changed the world. So we talked to him about Rosa Parks and about Harvey Milk and other people who just said, that is enough. It is time to change. And we sympathized, you know, that no one wants to have to do this work, and no one wants to do it in the time frame in which it is happening because it is too damn slow. But that change will happen, that the world will change. It is changing.
And we pointed out to him that it might not change in the time period that he wants it to, but he is one of those people who is actually making the change. He's one of those people doing the work. And I think that made a huge difference for him.
Do you?
Yeah.
That, it's hard to see change when you're in it sometimes.
That gave me goosebumps because he's definitely changing the world. So you've been listening to Dimensions University on the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. This program is supported by Gabe for Good Rocky Mountains. We've been talking with Sarah and Ian Hoffman, co-authors of Jacob's New Dress, Jacob's Room to Choose, and Jacob's School Play starring She, He, and They. If you'd like more information about Gabe for Good and their upcoming events, please visit gabeforgood.org/Rocky Mountains. Thanks for listening to Dimensions University on the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program.
Can I tell you a funny Sam story before we go?
Yeah.
People always ask, what does Sam think of the books, right? And the truth is we had no idea because he never talked about them. So finally, and we were kind of a little nervous to ask him about it. So in seventh grade, finally I worked up the courage and I said, so what do you think of the books? People always ask us. And he said, oh, I'm really proud of the two of you for writing them. And I was like, oh, great. I was like, by the way, your teacher asked if I could come in and read them at school. Is that okay with you? And he said, no. I was like, why? And he goes, I want to be known for who I am now that I'm 12, not what I did when I was 5. And I was like, oh, that was really succinct, wasn't it?